From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines at the half for you. Hope we all had a wonderful Easter. I'll tell you about my Easter story a little bit later on when we have open lines. Next hour, a field of energy surrounds all of us. Dr. Richard Bartlett talks about this. Now, I don't claim to be a faith healer by any means, but I do believe in tapping into the power in the universe for good, for incredible things. And I'm going to tell you a story, and we're going to bring someone on for just a few moments here to tell you a little bit about that story and to back up what I'm about to tell you. Several years ago, a friend of mine, his name is Butch, he's a well-known bartender in the St. Louis area, had throat cancer, and it was very serious, possibly terminal. And we talked, and I don't know what that compelled me to do this, but I reached across the table and touched Butch. I touched his throat, and he's fine. He's cured. I'm going to bring Butch in now because this story will relate to what we're going to talk about next hour, about a field of energy that surrounds us, because he did an incredible job to cure himself. Hey, Butch, thanks for staying up. How are you?
Hey, good, George. Good to talk to you.
Butch, tell all of us a little bit about what happened to you many years ago.
Okay, well, it was October of 2001, and I got diagnosed with what they, at the time, was an inoperable cancer. It had wrapped around my vocal cords and my aorta. That's why they couldn't operate. And the diagnosis was pretty grim. They said I had 6 to 12 months, and they were going to do some pretty aggressive radiation and chemo. And I went through that. And I think in the middle of the sessions is when I saw you. You were at Jimmy's, as a matter of fact, with
yes.
Ron Barber, and I was in there with some family. We were going over some details, and I went up and talked to you. And Ron and you were just sitting around having dinner. And then you told me about your prowess with some sort of healing. And you said, if you don't mind, I'd like to touch your throat and see if that'll help. And I said, at this point in time, anything would be better than what I'm going through. So you did that. We had a nice little chat about it. And here I am 5 years later, and it's in total remission right now.
Butch, after that episode, at what point did the doctors tell you, my gosh, this is getting better?
Well, I finished my treatments in December of 2001 when I had follow-ups, and it was about May when my oncologist and my pulmonary guy both remarked how the tumor had gone down. It was fairly large tumor, and it was pretty incredible. I remember in one of the reports, my one doctor wrote in his report that he has absolutely no idea why this man is still alive.
Butch, so I'm gonna.
It was about 6 months.
I'm gonna leave you with that. You and I could talk about this at length, as we have. You were able to tap into this force, whatever I was able to help give you, and you did this with a miraculous way of healing, and I just want everybody to know that this is real, and
this is real.
All right, my friend, you take care of yourself, and I'll see you this weekend, boy.
Okay, George, thanks a lot.
Okay, and this is a God's truth story, folks. I mean, it was the weirdest thing I have ever gone through. Since then, I did that for a friend of mine. She had a growth on her neck. She was a talk show host in St. Louis. She's now in Louisville. And that went away in remission. And like I say, I'm not a healer by any means. This is George, your talk show host.
But I think those of you who have listened to me over all these years are beginning to get a feeling and an understanding of what we have as a coast-to-coast family that we can talk to each other and also tap into the universe to solve almost any dilemma that we might have. And I wanted you to hear that because next hour we're going to talk about this field of energy that surrounds all of us. Some of the stories of the day: nearly eradicated in the United States 50 years ago, resistant strains now of super bed bugs are infesting mattresses at an alarming rate. And what's being touted now is the biggest mystery in the study of this. All 50 states are reporting outbreaks of the blood-sucking nocturnal critters. Pest control companies nationwide right now are reporting a 71% increase in bed bug calls between 2000 and 2005 alone. A few bed bugs, they say, can create a colony of thousands within weeks. I hope you all sleep well tonight after the program. A Charleston Southern University economics professor is in hot water with the Securities and Exchange Commission after nearly $134 million in investments have disappeared. Al Parrish, the self-proclaimed Economan of Charleston, South Carolina, now claims amnesia in the case of the missing money and has checked himself into a hospital. The SEC alleges that Parrish had sold interests in five investment funds since 1986 and provided false reporting to the fund's financial results. Four of the funds were informal pools of money, with the fifth focused on hard assets such as jewelry and art. Among Parrish's investors is his former employer, the Charleston Southern University, which invested some $10 million of its estimated $13 to $18 million endowment with the professor. No one knows where the money is. Iran has announced that it has begun enriching uranium with 3,000 centrifuges, dramatically expanding a program that the United States has demanded it halt. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said at a ceremony at the enrichment facility that Iran has now the capability of enriching nuclear fuel on an industrial scale. And with Tehran continuing to move ahead with its nuclear plans, rumors persist that the White House is planning a military strike on Iran this month. Preparations to strike Iran's strategic facilities comes from Colonel General Leonid Ishvov of Russia. Jerry Corsi broke the story on WorldNet Daily. He is with us. How serious is this one, Jerry?
George, great honor to be back with you. I take it to be very serious. First of all, the announcement today, or now yesterday, of Iran, that they've got 3,000 centrifuges, that exceeds by a factor of 10 the number of centrifuges that the world thought Iran had running. It's consistent with what I've been predicting. And it means that Iran, within a year, will be able almost certainly to enrich uranium to weapons quality and quantity. And that's very frightening. The reports coming out of Russia, as you indicated, George, continue even after the British sailors and Marines were returned. This General Ishvanov went back onto the Russian media and said again that an Operation Bite, a U.S. attack, Operation B-I-T-E, Bite, is predicted to occur in April, a massive U.S. air and missile strike, and the Russians are continuing this theme.
Now, they say that there are 450 cruise missiles on alert on our ships. What does Russia say they may do if we intend to attack Iran, Jerry?
Well, Russia has an alliance, as you know, George, with Iran, and they've just sold Iran this $1 billion missile system, this TOR M1 surface-to-air missile system. It's a mobile system. It's state-of-the-art. The Iranians have been trained by the Russians to operate it. They put it around their nuclear facilities. And Russia also included in the announcement that they believe that that missile system could take down anything, missile or plane, that we send after the Iranian facilities. So, George, it could, like I've said for 2 years now, a war could be extremely dangerous, and it could escalate with Russia coming to the support of Iran, especially if it looked like the United States were going to win a strategic advantage in an air and missile strike against Iran.
Jerry's complete story is on WorldNet Daily. His websites are linked up right now with his name on coasttocoastam.com. Jerry, thanks for the update.
Always a great pleasure. Thank you, George.
That's Jerry Corsi. Cartoonist Johnny Hart, whose award-winning BC Comet strip appeared in more than 1,300 newspapers worldwide, has died while working at his home in New York. He was 76 years old. BC, populated by prehistoric cavemen and dinosaurs, was launched in 1958 and eventually appeared in more than 1,300 newspapers with an audience of 100 million. The Seattle scientist who wants to test a controversial prediction from quantum theory that says light particles can go backward in time is himself running out of time. John Kramer, a physicist at the University of Washington, says he needs $20,000 to keep his testing going, but nobody seems interested in funding the project. The Russian-built Soyuz capsule carrying the American billionaire who helped develop Microsoft Word docked at the International Space Station on Monday. Charles Semyonyi, the American who shelled out $20 to $25 million to be the world's first paying private space traveler. And the ashes of James Doohan, as we reported last week, who played Chief Engineer Scotty on the original Star Trek TV series, have been loaded into a rocket, which is set to launch in New Mexico soon. In a moment, we're going to talk with the head of the company that plans to launch the rocket. In a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Charles Schaefer is an internationally recognized high technology entrepreneur and pioneer of the commercial space age. He is the chief executive officer of Space Services, Inc., the world's leading provider of public participation space missions. Mr. Schaefer also co-founded Celestis, and this has led the team that has garnered worldwide notice for the first launch of a post-cremation memorial space flight, carrying the ashes of several celebrities, space scientists, and enthusiasts into orbit. He's on right now on Coast to Coast. Charles, this is I got to tell you, for someone like Jimmy Doohan and some others who love space, Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper, what a great concept. How did you come up with this?
Well, I've actually traced it back to the science fiction novels in the 1800s even. But it's basically, for anyone that sort of feels at one with the cosmos or has always been interested in traveling into space, is not any more appropriate memorial service. And it's sort of been there at the level of demand for a number of years, and we've been able to accomplish five missions so far and are growing pretty rapidly.
How does this work? If somebody wants to be launched into space, ashes-wise, what happens?
Well, after they've made their choice, and at their time of need, when they've passed away, either their funeral service provider or the family provides us with a symbolic portion of cremated remains. We only launch a small portion into space because space is still pretty expensive. But we receive those. We put them into a flight capsule that includes, on the outside, the person's name and a flight message, and put those into our spacecraft, and then deliver the spacecraft to the rocket, to the launch vehicle provider. They integrate our spacecraft onto their rocket, and when it's launch day, we have families and friends from all over the world come to the launch site, do a tour, have a memorial service, and watch their loved one achieve an objective they've had in many cases all their lives.
Charles, what does it cost to send some grams of the loved one up there?
We have several different services, ranging from the mission that we're going to do out of New Mexico later this month, Earth Rise, which is a suborbital system that brings the cremated remains back. That's $500, and the prices for Earth orbit missions, which we've done four of, are around $1,295. And then we've done one mission to the moon so far, and that's $12,500.
Great idea, and I got to tell you, one day, I hope it's about 90 years from now, I'll let you send me up there too.
Well, it will be an honor to do that, and you know, it's something that's fulfilling for people from all over the world.
I'll be 146, Charles, but you never know with technology these days.
That's right. No doubt about that.
Now, who's going up, and when's the launch for this
launch
upcoming?
Launch is April the 28th, which is a Saturday, end of the month. We're flying out of the new Spaceport America in New Mexico. We have 202 participants from 11 countries. Probably the most well-known, of course, is James Doohan, who played Scotty on Star Trek. We also have Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper, as well as some NASA space scientists, actually a producer of Star Trek, John Meredith Lucas, as well as a number one country song hit writer from Nashville, Randy Van Warmer, and I think about 40 folks from Japan, and just all walks of life, really.
Well, this again is, I think, so important, not only for the publicity of space travel, but I think there's something there. There's a piece of us going back into space where we first came from, which I think is pretty important. What are the family members? You say you've done this five times already. What are some of the family members of those people who have had their ashes sent up there? What do they say about this afterwards?
They're just very thankful that the service is available. It's really interesting to watch people fly in from all over the world. They don't know each other. They're in grief. They've lost someone very close to them. And we, of course, can't eliminate that, but they'll go on a tour of the site. They'll go to the memorial service. They'll meet the other family members. And by launch day, which is usually the next day, when that rocket takes off, you're seeing high fives, you're seeing hugs, you're seeing an enormous emotional uplift, a closure. And all of a sudden, people from all over the world have created hundreds of new friends because they've shared this experience and they've been part of a real mission and they know that they've done something for their loved one and they feel great about it. You know, memorial services really are for the living. And we feel great whenever we accomplish one of these missions because we just have really helped people not only, as I say, achieve some level of closure, but they really feel like they've accomplished something and they've helped their loved one help open that space frontier.
Tell me a little bit of some of the past people, the ashes that have gone up there. I know Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry was blasted off, 10 years ago?
That's correct. And on that same mission was the 60s icon everyone's heard of, Timothy Leary. We also had space visionary Dr. Gerard K. O'Neill from Princeton University. We had the designer of the Bell X-1, the airplane that Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier in. We've had the first woman NASA astrogeologist. We helped NASA put Dr. Eugene Shoemaker, the noted astronomer discoverer of Comet Shoemaker-Levy, on the moon. We've also had, as I've said, we've had truck drivers, we've had restaurant owners, we've had people that were just fans of space. We've had a number of children, many of whom had childhood diseases and had found space to be very meaningful to them and really felt like they wanted in some way to be a part of the space mission.
If people want more information on this project, what do they do, Charles?
Well, they can go to memorialspaceflights.com, which is our website. And there they'll be able to let us know they're interested, and we'll send them out a DVD of the missions that we've done and really helps them see and plan for their own missions. They can also go to a local funeral service provider if they'd like to, and they'll get in touch with us. But we recommend everybody go to our website and learn a little bit more about what we're doing and the options that they have. And we've had a lot of people that have gone ahead and prearranged the service for themselves or themselves and a loved one as a way of sort of making a statement while they're still alive that they feel this is an appropriate memorial service. And again, as I said, it also, in many, many ways, it helps to open the space frontier by creating a way that people can participate in space and they don't have to have the $20 or $25 million it takes to buy a ticket these days.
And eventually, I guess if you believe in life after death, they'll still get the same feeling and experience, won't
they? Absolutely. There you go. Yes.
Charles, it's a great idea. And can you imagine how far they will be a billion years from now when you launch them?
It, It's hard to say. You know, space is huge, and we're working on missions that will take people to the very edge of our solar system.
Well, good for you. Charles, good luck on the project, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Right here. It's for open lines now. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And, yes, the wild card line, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter for a very, very limited time, you'll get the two shows, the two free shows of Father Malachi Martin talking about demons and exorcisms. You can call 1-888-727-5505 to subscribe to After Dark and get those two programs as well. 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. I've got to tell you my Easter story. First of all, I went over to my, I've got two daughters and a son, and I went over to one of my oldest daughter's house, and we all converged. I mean, the entire clan, the family, the three grandchildren, everybody, their mother, everybody was there. Everybody was there, and we were all sitting down having dinner, and, oh, maybe 20 minutes into the dinner, somebody came in the door. He brought a pot of beans. He put it on the stove. He brought the hot dogs, and he brought some buns, and he was putting them on the counter, and he was petting the dog and doing his thing. And about 5 minutes into this, my daughter looked at me and, with her lips moving, said, "Dad, who is that?" I don't know. It wasn't my house. It was hers. And so we went back to eating the Easter dinner. About 2 minutes later, this guy stops doing what he was doing. Dead stop. And he turns around and looks at all of us and goes, "You know what?" And I said, "Yep, you're in the wrong house, aren't you?" And he went, "I sure am." He packed up his stuff and politely walked out. But it was absolutely hilarious to watch the look on his face. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Dayton, Ohio.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
I'm calling to tell you about a near-death experience I have, and when I say near-death, I mean near-death. I was standing face-to-face with death.
Well, I tell you what, you got to get a better phone line because your phone line is near death right now. So try to call us back if you can. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. What's up? It's Dave calling from Philly.
Sure thing.
I was really, really impressed with the interview you did with Sean David Morton like a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
when we had the Japanese earthquake, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And you have to have him on again, George. Man, that was fantastic, that interview.
He's on a hot roll, I got to tell you. You know.
Yeah, well, he said April 17th, 18th, and 19th at Operation Tyrant that this month is going to take place.
Yep.
That there was an Admiral Fallon that he talked about. Oh, my God, man. The whole world is going to be in trouble if this happens. I mean, gas prices are going to go up, food prices, everything.
Gas prices will go through the roof.
I'm scared to death.
Well, we'll just have to sit back and see what happens. East of the Rockies, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Well, hi there, George. Is that me?
It sure is.
Well, my goodness, my very first time calling, and I got in on my second dial.
How about
How
that?
Cool
it's magic. That doesn't happen all the time.
It does not. I must have been meant to get through. Darling, thank you so much for giving us real news. I'm losing sleep every night because I just can't go to bed. I'm going to bed with the headphones on half the time, falling asleep to your voice. Listen, a couple of things about this wheat gluten poisoning. And by the way, I'm listening to you on 590 AM WKZO out of Kalamazoo.
Absolutely.
And one of our guys there just lost his kitty last week to this pet food poisoning. Has anybody looked into if any of this wheat gluten is getting into the human food?
Well, they think it may be getting into the human food in China. They do not believe it is into any food source here in this country. They have isolated it to a company in China, which says that it has not been sent over for human consumption here. However, they're concerned about it in China.
Yeah, and how trustworthy are they to tell us the truth about that?
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think we all need to be cautious, and if everybody just, you know, hit them where it hurts, hit them in the wallet, don't buy their stuff, and then they'll clean up their act. On the bee thing, with all the bees dying off, because all of the theories make sense, but, of course, I'm not a scientist. I'm just looking at my flowers and wondering, has anybody wondered if this is going to affect the hummingbirds at all?
No, nobody has brought up the hummingbirds. I've got an update Friday with Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter. We're going to talk about these honeybees again.
Okay.
My suspicion is it might have something to do with either the pesticides or something that they're playing around in the seeds or something. I just have a feeling mankind might have done something to these honeybees.
I think you're right, and that's the one I lean toward as well. And then, of course, I think it was Linda who said that the bugs themselves have built up a resistance to the built-in pesticides, so they're spraying stuff on it anyway. So we're double whammying ourselves. I think we all need to be cautious. And then one more thing, and then I'll let you go because I know you got a million callers. Have you ever tried to get John Edward, the psychic, on? I know Sylvia tanked the last time she was in, God bless her. She certainly didn't intend to do that. But have you ever tried to get John on? I have seen him in person three times. He is phenomenal.
He is. We haven't had him on recently. He may have been on the program several years ago. I know we've had James Van Praagh on and some others. Edwards, I'll have to check and see when he was on.
Well, see if you can get him back. That man has let me know that I am not insane. when there's people coming in my room in the middle of the night and I'm sitting up and having conversations, I really don't need a therapist. I'm okay. It's happening for real. And I owe him a great debt of gratitude for helping me stand back up and say, okay, I'm not scared anymore.
You are not insane.
Although some people might argue the point. Anyway, thank you so much for what you do for all of us. We really need you. You keep on going. God bless.
We will. We will. First time caller line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. How are you, George?
I'm wonderful, sir. And where might you be?
I am in Austin, Texas, sir. My name is Philip.
All right, Philip.
George, I am a physics student, and I'm 66 years old. I went back to college.
Good for you.
Well, thanks, guy. Having a great time with it, too. Keeps me really going.
Keeps me working
physics models in the middle of the night.
What was the Rod D. Dangerfield movie when he went back as a professor? Back to school, and he was some guy named Melton was his name.
Yeah.
Something like Mellon, yeah.
Yeah. He's a crazy guy. It kept him hopping, didn't it?
It sure did.
I was in lab this morning. We had read this article on the 300 centrifuges built by Iran already in progress to upgrade to industrial fissionable material used in production of electricity. And they stated that they were at the 90% level. And Sammy, one of the other students, said, well, you know, they're talking about all of the centrifuges needed to build enough to make an atomic bomb. But he said, listen, let me tell you something. It only takes a small amount, not the 62 pounds required to make a trigger for a fusion bomb or hydrogen bomb. Because the plasma field, in theory and in production, as a matter of fact, does make a containment field large enough to detonate the chain reaction in hydrogen required for this bomb to go off. And it's our opinion. We were discussing, there are 13 of us in the lab, we're discussing that, hey, these guys are not going for an atomic bomb. They're going for a fusion bomb.
Well, and if they make a fusion bomb, they can still have as much firepower as they need to do the damage.
Exactly.
What did those of you say in terms of the possibility of taking them out? What's the consensus, at least in the college you're in?
Well, we know that they have the Russian defense missile system, but we're looking at what would possibly be a real buster for them, and we figured that a rock hurled from space, or i.e. a spacecraft, out about halfway between here and the moon would certainly be guidable, be impact-worthy enough, much the same as a meteor would, and cause a catastrophic failure of everything in around.
Well, I got to tell you, though, you know, it is to me, and this is what concerns me, I just feel as if anything happens, we're unleashing hell on the planet.
Yeah. Well, we did discuss that and the amount of fallout that would occur. The fact that we would have something like that out there would, number one, it's not stoppable. Number two, it is not a radiological entity. And number three, it's far enough below the Earth to pull everything in under it and bury it. As far as anybody's retaliatory abilities, it certainly appears that this type of system would be indefensible.
You do know that once we do this, we're going to have to do it to every country that we feel could be a threat, because eventually somebody's going to get one and use it on us.
Well, that may be true if they can get them off the ground, but well, we also
have... Can't you do it in a suitcase?
Well, you can, but it would take two suitcases, and those have to be put together. It's not something that's just it's like our MIRV missiles. The warheads that are on those particular missiles, and I being an ex-Air Force and a former airline pilot for 50 years, it seems a pilot, but not an airline pilot for 50 years.
Yeah.
The delivery mechanism, those have to be cooled. They have to be maintained. And for someone to just say, well, hey, I've got a suitcase bomb and I'm going to blow it up, nah, that's patently ridiculous. Maybe a trunk or two. But today's technology just is not going to allow that right now. The size of the missiles themselves today are, you know, they're like 3.5 feet long and about a foot across at the bottom.
Would you advocate taking out that facility?
I would advocate it, yeah. Yeah, I think that a deal is going to have to be struck both financially with China and Russia that, look, guys, we have a problem. You have a problem. The world has a problem. If we can get rid of the problem, then we no longer have a problem. It's going to leave all of the terrorists that are out there with no home. They don't have a home.
Well, they still have Syria.
Well, I don't know so much about them. It's a serious problem, and it certainly needs some real looking into by everyone.
You do me a favor. Just continue to monitor what's going on. As a physics student, I like your mindset, at least in terms of your knowledge of the radioactivity, and check in with us from time to time. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. You are on the air. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that you made me think of something when you were talking about how you helped someone for healing them. I could really think that could really happen, because if people can do negative and ill will and put that on people, I think they, you know, the opposite can happen.
Yep. I think what I did for Butch was just to give him a faith and belief system that he probably already had, but I think that magnified it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no question that modern medicine helped the guy too, but he took whatever happened that day and made it work for himself.
Sure, and he believed in it, and the well-wishing too.
Absolutely.
That's right. And also, I thought of something today. I've been thinking about this bee thing. You know, what about the queen bee? Maybe she doesn't need as many workers, because with all the climactic crises, they have less
turf of areas to go, and she's not ordering for as many workers.
No, she needs all the workers she can get.
Oh. I thought maybe because all the floods and the fires and the storms that
most
maybe they...
queens do. Thanks. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hi, this is John from Bonnie Lake, Washington.
Hey, John.
I wanted to ask you if you were aware of, I'm not a follower of Pat Robertson, but were you aware of the prophecy that he gave about a month ago concerning the Middle East?
I was aware of it. I read it on WorldNet Daily. I am not a follower of him as well, but I did see it.
And I wanted to share with you the prophetical revelation that I got in January, which was before Pat Robertson received his word.
All right.
If I could.
And tell me a little bit about you. I mean, do you have a special gift? Or?
Well, I have been used with the gift of prophecy and with the gift of healing and with the word of knowledge and discernment, which these are things in the Bible that says would follow those that follow Christ.
All right. Well, give us your prophetic view.
This is exactly what was said. Look unto the Father, my beloved ones, for from a nation far to nations near, a great trembling is upon you. Every knee shall bow and tongue confess that I, Jesus, am Lord. I shall intervene in this matter. My servants, I call to you, be ready. As surely as the sun shines and the rain falls, this time is of my choosing. I found this very interesting.
All right, and give me the gist of it, yeah, without the scripture part.
That there was going to be a mighty trembling, that flesh would be dissipated into thin air, and that the fullness of the time had come, and this would happen this summer.
And so how do you interpret all this?
The same
what,
way.
What and where is going to happen?
There's going to be a nuclear exchange, more than one in the Middle East. There will be some nuclear exchanges limited to other parts of the world. The United States and Russia will have a limited exchange. But God will intervene because he's not going to let it come to a full-blown head, because this is the war of Ezekiel 38.
All right. Well, let's just hope that if it happens, it's fast. But I don't think it will be. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Megan from Homosassa, Florida. How are you?
Megan, good. We've got 2 minutes, and it's all yours. Take it away.
All right. It was Monday, last Monday, not tonight. I was coming home from school in Orlando, and I saw this red light in the sky, and it was blinking really fast. And it wasn't really blinking. It was more like a pulsating, and it looked like a football. And it looked like it was coming from the buildings in the downtown Orlando area. And I'm watching it come at me, and I see it, like, all of a sudden it kind of changed shape, and two wings, like, sprouted out from it, and one of them was yellow, one of them was white, and it started coming out toward my car. And I realized that I thought it was really far from me, but it wasn't. It was really small. It was maybe 4 feet in width, and it was just real small, but the red light underneath was just, like, lighting up the whole thing.
What do you think it was? You think it was, like, a radio-controlled plane?
You know, I asked my dad if that could be it, but I don't know. It grew wings, and it was, like, the light underneath of it that was red that was pulsating was lighting up the whole thing. Like the wings and everything, and there were two lights on it. It was so small, but it started traveling with my car, with my van. I'm driving in the van, and like the traffic behind me was just kind of like slowing down, stopping, and they're kind of like watching this thing. I'm just going. I'm like, I'm not going to let this thing get me. I'm just going to drive. And it starts following the van for a while, and all of a sudden it veers off into like some building areas.
I have no idea what that was. Up next, Dr. Richard Bartlett, talk about energy. Transformation. We'll be back.